Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, it's been a long time coming, but I want to do something very special on the opening of today's show.
Oh, really?
I have a box of Star Trek cards in front of me that you sent to me.
Yeah!
I meant to get to this on the last episode, and I spaced out because I was drinking a beer, but I'm gonna open this thing up.
Oh, that's awesome!
So this is Star Trek: The Next Generation Portfolio Prints Trading Cards Series 1. That is a series of words and phrases that are essentially meaningless to me. And then it's got a silver sticker that says this is number 4,055 out of 6,000. So I guess there's a limited number of these out there in the wild, and I'm probably committing a grave sacrilege by cutting into this, breaking all the seals.
Only 6,000 boxes.
I know. Can you imagine the demand that must have built up for these precious few boxes?
I want that box to be full of Argyles. Like, the intention for me was to buy you nothing but Argyles, but that option was not open.
Okay, so this, it's a box full of little packets of cards. Maybe there's like, I don't know, these might be like eight cards to a pack. Oh, God, five cards to a pack.
This is great pod. I'm riveted.
I'm just gonna open one pack. We'll see what's inside.
Yeah, if this segment works, we can keep doing it.
What do you know about these cards?
When I was doing an eBay search for the Star Trek cards that I bought as a kid with that $20 bill,
yeah,
I couldn't find anyone selling them. Like, that's how little value they had.
Well, I was recently at an estate sale with our friend Jesse Thorne, proprietor of MaximumFun.org, and he showed me a section of trading cards that was replete with these, and also like Babylon 5 cards and cards from things that you would never expect anybody to collect things.
Murder, She Wrote cards?
Yeah. Okay, so I've got five cards here. What do I have?
Whoa, each pack only has five cards?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I have one called Frame of Mind. I guess this is the name of an episode.
Okay.
And it's got like a pretty crazed picture of Commander Riker.
Oh, fun. You should post pictures of these on our Twitter at hashtag GreatestGen.
Oh, I sure will. I have one for Data Lore, the episode in which Data's evil twin brother Lore is introduced.
Oh, good. An episode we've actually watched.
Yeah, and it's like their heads are sort of back to back and, you know, like pushed together, so there's a common hole, and then there's like circuits exploding out of the hole.
Oh man, I was hoping that one would have been like a hologram card where the hologram was like Data spazzing out on the ground when Lore was hitting his button. That would have been fun.
That would have been good. Oh, here's a signed one.
Oh, who do we got?
This is signed by George Baxter, who played David in the episode Unnatural Selection.
I'm gonna have to go to the internet for this one.
Yeah, this is not a person I recognize at all. Oh wait, this might be like one of the perfect children in that episode where like I think everybody's getting old or something. Remember that episode?
As a featured actor, he received no credit for his appearance. You got a signed card from a C actor who was never credited for his role in the show. That is awesome.
They are real gangsters with the show credits on this series, aren't they?
God, this George Baxter guy would be great at Greatest Gen Con.
Oh, we'd love to have George Baxter there. I mean, if he's down to sign, he's down to come to Greatest Gen Con.
I think one of the biggest rules of being at Greatest Gen Con and on a panel is that you could not have been credited on the show while making an appearance on the show.
Oh yeah, that's
I think that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, anybody that was a major character in a film and didn't get a credit also can be there. So Khan's right hand man Wrath of Khan.
I'm going to look up the value of that signed card on eBay. What are the other cards that you have?
So the last two are one for the episode I, Borg, which is the one where they like find a Borg and name it and then like feel really bad when they have to send it back to the collective. Here's another card for the episode Unnatural Selection. Let's see. It's just got a little synopsis on the back here. The Enterprise crew learns that everyone on the USS Lantry has died of rapid aging. My memory is almost flawless, Adam.
Yeah, clearly.
This is an episode in season two because there's a mention of Dr. Pulaski here.
Oh, fun. Yeah, so the highest value I found for the card you're holding, the George Baxter card, is $17.
Let's assume I could sell it for the highest value, being that I'm a noted Star Trek enthusiasm celebrity.
You are. Wow, $17. That's pretty good.
That is not bad. I feel like this this adventure is already paying for itself.
You should roll that value back into more boxes of Star Trek cards. That's
that's my the way to win at Vegas, right?
That's my gambling mind at work there. Oh man, that was fun. Is that all the cards?
That was all five cards.
Wow. Yeah, definitely take a picture of that and put it online. I'd like to see.
I will. There are literally dozens and dozens more packs of cards. So we could conceivably do this for the rest of the series.
Awesome. I think we should return to that. Why don't we talk about our episode today? It's season 2, episode 6, The Schizoid Man. Did I pronounce that correctly?
I would have said schizoid, but schizoid? I'm willing to defer to you on this.
Was that the sound of another beer being opened over there?
Mayhaps it was, Adam. The replicator is close at hand, and I'm rapidly turning into a beer-drinking Star Trek podcaster.
I really love how this podcast is slowly morphing
becoming
its way
a cheap
into
ripoff
your
of the Flophouse.
No.
Major leitmotif on that show is Stuart Wellington cracking a BrewDog every like 3 to 4 minutes, I want to say.
Oh, geez. Well, yeah. I thought we were morphing our way into your other podcast. You're quite successful. Let's Drink About It podcast.
Yeah, I have to maintain some separation of the two intellectual properties. My attorneys are very clear about that.
Well, I am also feeling particularly scorched as you got custody of me in your divorce. So things are still pretty tender between me and Chris, I think.
I was editing an episode of our show the other day, and I was just like using my laptop speakers to play back a section, and my wife walked by and heard you cracking wise about something and just went, "Oh, I love Adam."
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. It sort of it reminded me of that that time you told me about when your wife picked you up for something and she was listening to your show in her car.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, Adam's wife loves Adam. My wife loves Adam. Where does that leave me?
I'm a real hit with the wives.
All right. So this episode, The Schizoid Man.
That might have been the longest preamble that we've ever had on the show. We're keeping all of it, by the way.
The Enterprise is en route to provide medical care for the reclusive scientist, Ira Graves. It's yet another episode where a nutty scientist has left the Federation and gone off to some remote planet to be by himself and pursue his research in peace.
It makes me think the Federation might be anti-science.
Yeah, what is going on in the Federation that every luminary in every field of science has bugged out?
Yeah, I don't get it.
So it's peculiar because they're getting a distress signal from Graves World, which is the name of the planet that Ira Graves has gone to.
That's convenient.
Yeah. I wonder if that's just a coincidence or, you know, how that works out.
Captain, stop the ship. I think this is where you need to drop me off.
Just feels like it was meant to be, man. But they're getting this distress signal, but the communications from Graves World have been shut off. So they can't reply to say, like, we're en route. They can't get any more information about what's going on. And so they're going as fast as they can. And then they get another distress call from a ship that's nearby that is, I guess they had like an onboard explosion and there's like thousands of people on board that might be suffering from hypoxia and other injuries. And Pulaski, who's been real bullish on how excited she was to meet Graves, is like, no, we got to go help this other ship. It's just so many more people. So they're like, what do we do? And they decide to do a semi-dangerous maneuver, we're led to believe, called a near warp transport, which is where they drop out of warp momentarily, transport some people down to planet surface, and then warp out toward this ship that they're going to provide some aid to. So because they're doing this, they're not going to send Pulaski down to the planet, which is, for some reason, an important plot point. They're going to send like a hot looking Vulcan doctor instead. And so who is it? It's Data, Vulcan doctor, Troy, and Worf?
And Worf, yeah.
Yeah. So,
Worf gets a great line here. So the group beams down using this process, which is basically like stopping the ship suddenly, beaming them down, and then it goes to warp again, which really doesn't seem like it would be any huge deal.
No.
But we are made to believe that it makes you feel pretty weird if you're on the beeming end of things.
They also like task Geordi with running the transport, so I guess he is taking the mantle in Yar's absence of being best at transporter.
Yeah.
Even though O'Brien now has the job of transporter chief, they want Geordi to do this.
Yeah. O'Brien's just best at standing there. Mainly.
Yeah, looking off into the distance and feeling ennui.
So they get down there and Troy's like, holy shit.
This might sound crazy, but for a moment, I thought I was stuck in that wall.
For a moment you were.
How'd that wall feel?
I feel like Troy is willing to let people like mansplain shit to her in a way that is almost hard to buy. But she's like, what's happening? Are we on a spaceship? Where are we going?
It's got to be doubly infuriating because she can sense their thoughts as well. Like, it's not just that she's getting mansplained all the time, it's that she knows it's coming.
Yeah. She can see that on the horizon.
Ugh. Yeah. Poor Troy. Moms. Can't live with them. Can't find a great gift for them. It's madness. And it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. Folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures.
every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leader in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
They're going to start spreading out and searching Graves' compound, but Karine Briannon, his lovely 19-year-old blonde assistant, comes out and finds them, and she explains that she put this distress call out in this weird way because she didn't want Graves to find out. And Graves, like, makes a real grand entrance here and kind of, like, completes her sentence.
I couldn't take the chance.
Chance? What chance?
A chance that I might find out someone was coming? Karine knew full well that I would not be pleased, to put it mildly.
He's got like a Peter Falk-style lazy eye. That was very distracting to me. He's also
Has this guy been in other stuff? I feel like he like sounds really familiar for some reason.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. I also felt the same way. The actor playing Ira Graves is W. Morgan Shepherd, and you remember his voice just like I do, because he was the prison warden on Rue Repente in Star Trek VI.
Oh.
There are no stockades. There is no wall.
Work well, and you will be treated well. Work badly, and you will die.
That's the guy.
Oh, man. Yeah. That is such a good call. That is... Yeah. Aside from Wrath of Khan, that is my favorite of the Star Trek films.
Me too. Yeah, it's all about 2 and 6.
Oh man,
only ones
that
I
is,
need.
All that, all the like Shakespearean Klingon and and all the
floaty, you know, pink blood.
Yeah, it's like a war movie and a prison escape movie and a mystery movie all wrapped into one.
We find out there's a kitchen on the Enterprise and they like make mashed potatoes by hand.
Yeah. Vulcan Kim Cattrall with a North Korean haircut. I mean, come on.
Oh, that movie's the total package. Love it.
Fully
I watch it
delivers.
All the time.
Yeah.
Well, back to this shitty episode.
Basically, Graves is anti-doctor. He doesn't want anybody waving any scanners at him. So he's, you know, despite the fact that he is a raging misogynist and chauvinist around this hot Vulcan doctor.
Yeah, he full on like stares at her boobs.
Yeah. He really takes umbrage at her like being close to him with scanning instrumentation, which I feel like it's one thing to not want a doctor to like put something up your butt to find out how your prostate is doing. It's another thing when the doctor can stand like 3 feet away from you with a little scanning module from a tricorder. Like, how can you complain about that?
I don't know. I guess I should be clear too. Like, Ira wasn't staring at her boobs. Like, one eye was staring at her boobs. The other eye was like off.
Yeah,
like
hard to say.
Looking at the vase on the other side of the room.
Yeah, it's like anybody with a lazy eye. It's hard to tell what they're actually looking at. You know,
she's not being a dick about her scan either. Like, she's just giving him a once over. It's not a big deal. The guy's just really flipping shit.
Yeah. But she determines that he has some space disease.
He's got a case of the spaces.
Yeah.
Moments like this require someone who will act. Do the unpleasant thing. The necessary thing.
Which has nothing to do with a House of Cards actor. He takes a real shine to Data right away.
Yeah, he's got a couple months to live, and he wants to spend as much of them as possible sitting at his computer while Data stands around nearby. Listening to his bullshit.
He does that weird thing, like where he projects a familiarity onto someone else. Like he invites Data to call him Grandpa.
Yeah, well, because when he immediately identifies Dr. Noonien Soong's work when he sees Data. He says like, no aesthetic value of any kind. This is Soong's work. And
Way someone would go into a museum and go like, yeah, that's a Picasso because that woman's got a fucked up face.
Yeah.
Looking at Data, you can just tell.
And he tells Data that he taught Soong everything he knew. And that in a way makes him Data's grandfather.
And so his request of Data is for him to call him Grandpa for the rest of the episode, which he does.
Yeah. As Data do, Data takes that very literally and just goes with the flow. So Graves is the kind of character that does a lot of monologizing about his evil plan. So while Data is in this room, he spends some time explaining how he's developed a method to transfer his brain's consciousness into the computer, you know, saving all of his memories and all of his thoughts for eternity. And Data lets slip that he can be deactivated. And that's all Graves needs to know.
Because of his familiarity with Soong, he guesses that he knows exactly where that button is.
Right.
Where would Soong put such a device?
Let me try the balls.
So the Enterprise.
Let me try them again. One final time.
On second thought, that was the penultimate time. Let's try it once again.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So the Enterprise is finished with the with helping this other ship and returns to orbit around Graves' world, and they ask the away team what their status is, and Data comes out and kind of dramatically announces that Graves has bought the farm. So they all beam back up, and they have a little funeral ceremony for Graves in the transporter room, which I thought was a weird place to have a funeral, given how non-ceremonial it feels in there.
Yeah, evidently he had very specific instructions on what to do with him after his death. And I guess one of those instructions was to wrap him in chainmail and stick him in a torpedo tube.
Yeah.
Or stick him in a torpedo casing with a window on it.
He does look a lot like the knight that is guarding the Holy Grail in that Indiana Jones film.
What I was thinking, yeah. Absolutely. One of the Knights of Knee.
a weird scene. And this sort of begs a question about the transporters that I've always wondered, which is why do they need a room if a point-to-point transport is doable?
I don't know. I guess you just want a place to assemble your Dustbuster Club, right?
Yeah, that does look pretty...
You want a place to go over some shit.
Yeah, fair enough.
Hey, Ben, if he had to go, I have a feeling I know the answer to this question. You'd want to be shot out of the torpedo tube instead of just beamed into space, right?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, what is Graves' deal? Like, he could have been as specific as he wanted to be. He could have asked for anything after his death. And they're like, yeah, just beam me out into space and I'll just float around.
Enough for Spock should be good enough for Graves, I feel like.
Yeah, shoot me like a weapon is how I'd want to go out.
That's what I love about you, Adam.
Where even in death, I would become a danger to myself and everyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I respect your commitment to menace and chaos.
Chaotic death.
So at this funeral, Data gets up and starts speaking about what a great man Graves was and what a devastating loss this is for the Federation and everybody in it.
It's a pretty great eulogy. It's way better than the one Tasha Yar got.
Absolutely, but it's delivered in this incredibly sappy way, and it starts to make everybody assembled feel real uncomfortable to the point where Picard cuts him short and says, like, Data, you gotta cut this off. Like, this is ridiculous.
To know him is to love him. To love him is to know him.
Those who knew him loved him. And those who did not know him loved him from afar.
Really awful.
Yeah. Which, you know, Graves' whole thing is that he's a fucking genius, but he can't write for shit. Even for his own funeral, he can't write a good eulogy.
I think that's why he was probably kicked out of the Federation science area, which was he was just so insufferable to be around.
It's a real masterclass in overacting from Lieutenant Commander Data.
Yeah.
Just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
So this isn't the only time that Data's acting weird. He starts really throwing his shit around.
Yeah, he just kind of, you know, starts being real arrogant and shitty to everybody else. He really graves around a bunch. And, you know, like, there's some great little throwaway moments. Like, at some point, he's called into the ready room to get sort of called to task for what a dick he's acting like. And when he leaves, he walks out and, like, a female crewman walks by and he makes a point of getting a load of her butt as she walks past.
Yeah, he gets a real big load of that butt. Like, he basically leans over and watches her walk away from him.
Yeah, and then pulls a bike horn out of his pocket and goes, "Hauga!"
Wobada, wobada, wobada. Yeah, and he takes a super shine to Kareen. And this is really the thing that tips us off that... Graves is inside Data in any number of ways, but he's clearly very affectionate and protective of Kareen in all of their interactions.
And at some point, like, he thinks that Picard is kind of trying to put the moves on her and, you know, makes a little, like, under the breath comment about it. And when everybody clears out, Troy turns to Riker and goes, like, I was feeling, like, emotions of jealousy coming from Data. Which I thought was really weird, because she could have gone and told the captain about that, but she chose not to. Like, I feel like this would be, like, a bigger sign of something being up, if not wrong. You know, like, there's something going on with Data if you're sensing human emotion coming out of him, right?
Right, and also... Once again, like the most dangerous figure on board the ship. As soon as Data starts acting weird, that should be cause for really big concern.
Yeah.
Like, that's a calling all cars situation. And Troy's like, huh, that's weird. I'm going to go back to Ancestry.com now.
So they order Data to undergo some diagnostics. And they first start with physical diagnostics. And he goes down to engineering, and Geordi uses this kind of like electro hula hoop scanner, which I feel like it's the only time we've seen this, but it's like the coolest scanner of all time.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, it's like it's making this like bright blue light beam that envelops, you know, like circles around Data's body and gets like bigger or smaller depending on how much body it has to surround.
Yeah. And Data's all like, he's not really wanting to help. He's all wiggly. Geordi's like, cut it out, man. I'm trying to hula hoop you.
They can't find anything physically wrong with him. And so Troy suggests maybe there's something psychologically wrong with him. Maybe this isn't a hardware problem. It's a software problem. And so she runs, I think, what's called the psychotronic test on him, which they say like everybody has to pass in order to get out of Starfleet Academy. Apparently it's just like putting some brain scanners on him and then showing him a bunch of images and seeing how his brain reacts.
You're in a desert, walking along in the sand when all of a sudden...
Is this the test now?
Yes. You're in a desert, walking along in the sand when all of a sudden you look...
What one?
What?
What desert?
And so they just show like all of these images like from this episode, from past episodes. There's even some stills in there from like the Genesis device going off in... In Wrath of Khan.
They gathered a bunch of Star Trek stock photography.
Yeah, which I thought was cool. It was cool to like have some deep cuts tossed in there with some more contemporary stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Remick was in there. It was in that quick slideshow.
Oh, was he? I didn't notice that.
Old shovel face, yeah.
Giggity! She determines through this process that Data has a split personality. There's two personalities, and one of them is the dominant one and one is the recessive one. And, you know, it becomes clear that that Graves has loaded his consciousness into Data and that it's slowly taking over and that if they don't do something soon, Data is going to be lost.
They have this rap about Data's prognosis away from Data, and Picard's like, well, gotta go find him, gotta go see if I can lawyer this thing out of him. Meanwhile, Data's a 10 forward, putting the moves on Kareen, and he's pretty much spilled the beans at this point. He's like, Kareen, I was an old man, old and infirm and soft, but now look at me, I'm a robot man, which means I can have infinite stamina and live forever. And this does not go well for him.
I am fully functional and programmed in multiple techniques, Kareen.
He expects Kareen to be like, awesome, build me a robot body too and we can watch the end of time. But Kareen is not happy about this. She sees him for sort of the monster that he is.
Yeah.
This is really upsetting to the Data Graves figure who inadvertently breaks both of her hands while holding them during this scene. Like, holy shit. Like, it's actually, like, notably violent.
Yeah.
We find out later that her hands have been broken by him. So, that didn't go well for the Data Graves figure. He basically, like, spills the beans that, like, look, I've wanted to fuck you forever, and now I actually can. Like, let's do it.
Now I got a functioning cock. Let's get down, baby. Let's get down.
I've got two working eyes and one working cock. Let's do it.
Which I think
she's like, no way, Jose.
Any dude who has ever had consensual sex with a woman knows is not the way to a woman's heart.
I've tried this method a few times, and it hasn't worked a single time.
Yeah. I'm working my way up to it, but...
Especially the hand breaking.
So far, everything I've tried hasn't worked.
Yeah. So Data Graves bolts at this point, and he's super pissed. So Picard goes to confront him in engineering, yeah? Is that the next scene?
Yeah, and this sort of echoes that confrontation that Worf has with the Klingon in engineering that one time.
Yeah.
You know, Picard walks in, there's, like, everybody's down, like, Geordi is passed out on the floor, and, you know, Graves Data is saying, like, you know, I'm not a violent man, this is not my way, don't judge me by this, I just had to, and And this is like a pretty great lawyer Picard scene, because mm-hmm. Picard essentially talks Graves out of being alive.
Like, yeah. He talks him into suicide, basically.
Yeah. Which is pretty intense. He says, like, okay, you cheated death for a few days, but like, you're going to do that at the expense of the consciousness of a totally unique individual that is totally irreplaceable. And that's, you know, your calculus that he's a machine and you're a man and therefore more important doesn't really hold up around here. We like Data more than we like you.
Yeah, Data isn't as much of a dickhead as you are. Yeah, you know Picard's lawyering is rad because the decision that Graves makes to terminate his consciousness inside of Data and, like, put all of his smart stuff into the Enterprise computer, like, man, that seems like the biggest leap of the show.
Totally.
It's like the guy has a chance to live forever inside Data. He could take over the ship at any point. He could kill anyone he wanted. He has ultimate power, and he gives it up.
I feel like it was believable, though.
Because of Picard's great lawyering?
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
You didn't feel the same way.
It certainly redeems Graves as a character because, you know, he is a monster up to a point, but then accepts the idea of dying and then,
yeah.
And then does. So Picard lawyers him, but not before Graves pimp slaps the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And if Data Graves wasn't careful, like, he could have slapped Picard's head off. He clearly yeah. doesn't know his own strength.
No.
He could have killed both Geordi and Picard, and he doesn't. Basically on accident. And not only that, like, Picard could have fallen through that glass floor. Like,
Which we know
dangerous,
to be very delicate.
Yeah, we know how dangerous those glass floors are surrounding the warp core. So yeah. Any number of bad things could have happened.
It's a real miracle that everybody survives this ep. They find Data lying on the floor of his quarters, and Graves has transferred himself out of Data and into the computer, and Data asks everybody why he's lying on the ground, and it's a real laugh line.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, basically, he experienced the blackout that we all have from time to time. What did I do at that party, you guys? Why are you all looking at me weird?
Nothing, dude. Nothing.
He basically wakes up with a sharpied penis on his forehead and can't remember how it got there.
Damok Angelad Tanagra. Damok Angelad Tanagra.
How'd you feel about this episode, Adam?
Not great. I think the best part of the episode was the very beginning, was the cold open, which we didn't talk about. So Troy and Geordi are walking through the corridors, and Troy's like, what's this all about, Geordi? Like, what are you so excited over? Geordi's like, Data is super pumped about showing us something in his room. We got to go check it out. I've never heard him act this way before. So they go into Data's room, and the doors open up. And you see Data from behind, and he's just sort of standing, looking in the corner. And it's like we see Data through Geordi and Troy's eyes first, and it's just a total crack up. They're like, what the fuck is up with this? Data turns around to reveal, like, basically a pube beard on his face. It is just the most terrifying looking beard ever.
A fine, full, dignified beard.
And they are shocked by this.
I wonder how much they thought about going a whole episode with Data bearded.
I would have loved that. I wish they
had. Oh, it would have been so great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so awesome. There's a couple, like, laugh out loud lines in this scene. One of them really got me. God, I don't remember who asks, but I think it was Troy that was like, did you damage your face? Which, like, that terminology is awesome for a number of reasons, but also, like, that is the question my wife asks me every time I go more than 2 days without shaving. Like, like, as bad as this beard was on Data, I was still a little envious.
It was a very full beard.
It looked like a boy band beard that had been painted in with, like, mascara.
Right. Yeah.
It was real bad.
There was some Grecian formula in this beard.
I wish we had gotten the scene where it grows. Like, I'm sure they just didn't have the technology to show it, but, like, the scene where Data holds his breath and pushes a beard out of his face, I think would have been hilarious. Yeah, and like the scene where he just grows a huge nap of prodigious chest hair. Like, like the amount of time he spends just fucking around with body hair.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
It'd be so good.
This was that was the best scene of a mostly forgettable episode, I thought.
I agree.
What did you think?
I'm right there with you.
As you were watching this episode, did you find yourself a little drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I sure did. This is a little throwaway line that I just thought was real funny. I feel like Jim Shimoda's spirit was alive in this moment. At the end, when they're waking Data up off the floor and he doesn't remember anything, and he's like asking what happened, Riker goes, "Does wrestling with a Klingon Targ mean anything to you?" And they're all like laughing, which I feel like is doubly cruel because A, it's just, you know, not something that Data actually did, and B, Data is the kind of person that will believe that Riker is just being 100% truthful.
Right.
But it's also just like Riker could have made a real joke about something that Data really did when he was passed out, but he went with, "Does wrestling with a Klingon Targ mean anything to you?"
Yeah, ridiculous. Do you remember staring at all those asses for a couple of days?
Yeah.
Does that come to mind at all?
Yeah, remember temporarily beating my point average for female conquest on the ship?
You remember almost slapping Picard's head off of his neck? My Shimoda goes a little darker than yours, I think. Just the idea that the only reason that Graves wants to live forever is so he can fuck his assistant is like, that's like the most basis. That's the most base version of a Shimoda, like to be just led around by your cock into making a decision. And that was that for me. Like, God, like the stakes are so high and it's just for his assistant. Like,
She's
super foxy, that's for sure.
She's a hot lady.
She is very foxy, but is basically given zero character at all. Like, we don't know a thing about her.
Yeah.
So, must be pretty great if Graves is into it that much, but also, like, we can't really trust Graves' judgment about anything.
No.
Yeah, so sort of a dark Shimoda on that one.
I am Locutus aboard. You will respond to my questions. I am Locutus aboard. You are Borg.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
Adam, this is kind of crazy, but we actually have episode 7, Unnatural Selection, coming up, which is two Star Trek cards that I happened to open at the beginning of this episode.
One is going to believe this, but I promise you, like this is absolutely legitimate. Like, we didn't set that up. You got cards coming from the episode we're about to watch.
Two out of five cards that I opened from a packet of a box with, I mean, there's probably 200 cards in here.
God. You know what? We should do the card opening from time to time, but I think we should respect it a little more if these are magic cards that I got you.
Yeah, it seems like they may be.
Yeah, it's a real, it's sort of a late night Johnny Carson bit. Like, you open up the Star Trek card and then we get the next episode that was inside.
Yeah. It's like Yuri Geller had something to do with these cards.
2%er. So what's Unnatural Selection about?
The crew grapples with a mysterious disease which accelerates the aging process, causing humans to die of old age within a matter of days.
Oh man, I do remember this episode. They break out that face makeup that they put on that one admiral like 10 episodes ago, right? Like, basically the burlap sack covered in plaster. Everyone gets real old looking. It's great.
I think the thing that I remember kind of hating about this episode is that the actors that play the people that like have been exposed to this disease for a while are actual old people. So then when
they're
like turn around
in front of them.
Yeah. So then when they turn around and start doing the makeup, it just looks all the more cheesy for it.
God, that's so cruel. This is what we think you look like. I remember actually rooting for Pulaski to die in this episode.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's definitely like the most advanced in years of any character on the ship. And
the most disliked character of season 2.
Yeah.
Like, even at a very young age, I remember like, well, she's not in the real credits. They're still introducing her as special guest. Like, maybe this is her last one.
Do you remember what happens to Wesley the boy in this episode?
No, no. Does he get old?
I don't know. I can't remember. I'm dying to find out.
All right. Well, let's check it out. Let's check it out and then do another episode of this show.
Sounds good.
That sound like a good plan?
Yeah, we could keep fueling our podcast.
All right. Well, if you want to talk about this, that, or any other episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, feel free to seek us out on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. We're also on there as Cut for Time and Benjamin R, AHR.
Please go to iTunes and leave us a nice review.
Yeah, if you haven't done that yet, make that a part of your routine.
Yeah, we've got so many, and we're so honored by everybody who has done it already. But it's like one of the number one ways we expand our audience, and you know, it's not a lot to ask, I don't think. So go ahead and do that.
Yeah, thanks, or whatever. Look, if I could rate you as listeners, I would.
Yeah, five stars.
Yeah, if you're listening to this show, five stars for you.
You're the best.
Yeah, why don't you get us back with some of that five-star action? Thanks. We want to thank Dark Materia for our opening and interstitial music. Thanks, Dark Materia.
Thank you, sir.
Find the Picard song everywhere.
And we will be back at you next time with another amazing episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and also another episode of The Greatest Generation.
Sounds great. See you then.
Later, Adam.
Bye. MaximumFun.org.